Jean Harlow, who was a woman in the tropics of somewhat dubious morality, and that it was pouring down with a tropic rain, and that Jean Harlow went out on the porch and looked around and said, "Pity the poor sailors on a night like this." And the theater roared. Well, we didn't understand what they were roaring about, but we roared too. Now I know, of course, but at that point we were just roaring because we wouldn't have been caught dead not being sophisticated. That was a very important part of your life, to be very sophisticated. Because Joan Crawford was sophisticated. Betty Davis was sophisticated. And Barbara Stanwyck was too. So that's what you had to be.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any of the black movies? All black?
I made them. I'm the prime mover in that department.
Well, then I'll skip that then and come back to that later. Because I want to focus still on childhood and the last couple of things in terms of, besides the movies, did you have pets?
Oh, yes, we always had a dog we called Kim. Well, we didn't care what kind of dog it was. We pretended like it was very well, highly bred, and its name was always Kim. Subsequently, my brother had a daughter, and what did he name her? Kim.
Were you into clothes and the other things that some teenage girls get into?
No money.
But your father was doing better than most people, most black people.
But you see, he would take whatever money, whatever profit he made, he would take and hold it aside to acquire more property. When my father died, he was a millionaire once again. And this is some story to come into town, 15 cents in your jeans.
He was a literal millionaire?
Yes. When the Treasury Department opened his bank accounts and tallied his worth, he was worth over $1 million.
Why do you think he was so attached to accumulating property? What was he going to do with it?
Well, for one thing, the purpose was always for me to move from New York back here with my current husband, who he was very fond of. And I assumed that he intended that he would help us along in our lives.
Did he expect your brother to be as accumulative in property as he was?
Oh, yeah. He whipped the daylights out of him until he did it. My brother went to the Korean War, and while my brother was at war in Korea, my father was writing to him and telling him to pick up mementos to bring back for the men who were going to be his bosses at the Transbay Federal Bank, that he must bring them back letter openers and things for their desks and so forth, that would put him in good with them. And sure enough, the day he landed, my father threw a big bash. He had a cocktail party for 500 people to announce that his son was back. And after the cocktail party was over, he had a dinner party for the members of the board of the Transbay Bank. Mm-hmm. This was to push them into putting my brother back into his position that he had held before he went to the war. And he accomplished all of that. He always did what he set out to do.
You may
have been a little bit bloodied because of it, but it got done.
Were your parents, was he still married at the time of his death?
Yes. Yes, he hung in there till the end.
From Hillsboro, where did you go to school when you moved back up here?
I went to school in San Francisco, to Lowell. You'll remember that Josephine Cole went to Lowell also.
Right. I was wondering if there was
a tie.
I wasn't sure about the... Mm-hmm. The time period. So you were starting high school when you did get back here?
Yes.
Okay. What do you remember about Lowell?
I remember that it was an academic school, that it was better class whites, who were the type of people I was accustomed to, that I had no friends there because there were no other colored kids there, and you were kind of regarded as that strange-looking person in the hall. And Josephine had just graduated when I went to school there.
Mm-hmm. It's a little difficult for me to believe that no one had the guts to make friends.
No. What eventually happened was, in walking back home at night, I used to take the long way around rather than go through a cemetery. And there was a little white girl that used to be walking about the same time I did, and eventually we got to talking. Or maybe we had a class together or whatever. She was a little Jewish girl, it turned out. And we began studying together at the library after dinner at night. And we began walking home, and she became my friend. Until she caught my father laying it on me.
Oh, was she Resnick? Resnick?
Mm-hmm.
Same girl. And then she, that's what broke you up?
Well, I was ashamed. For one thing, he gave me such a good wallop, and I had stripes up and down my legs, and I couldn't go to school for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And when I did show back up, I just stayed out of her way. You know, I stayed in the gym till I knew she'd left the school grounds and all of that.
Did your parents ever accept this kind of tacit racial segregation, or did they expect you to make aggressive moves to find friends?
No, my father was busy telling me it wouldn't work out. And don't do it.
So he accepted it as a way, a fact of life.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like school? If you had, even without your parents' push or your father's push, would you consider that you would have?
Yes, I was an excellent student without really, you know, having to apply myself. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. What were your favorite subjects?
History. And art classes.
Uh-huh. What kind of person became the teacher's pet in those days?
The one who had the most facts, the fingertips to offer the teachers aids.
Teachers didn't encourage perhaps not the brightest student, but the one who seemed to be the most imaginative or the most creative?
No, it was the brightest student always.
How did students... Did you feel a large, like a chasm or... some distance between yourself? Would you ever consider a teacher a friend, someone you go to for advice?
Yes. From going back to the time when I was in Hillsborough, actually it was a very difficult time for me when I was in that school, as I look back. There was a creek that ran around the school, and there was a culvert, one of those concrete cylinders, mm-hmm. that ran from the polo grounds, which was maybe half a mile away, underneath the schoolyard, and dumped into the creek. It was for drainage purposes. Well, I would eat my lunch at school. The wealthy children went to the cafeteria because they had cafeteria money. I did not. I brought my lunch. Sometimes I would eat it. Sometimes I was ashamed to eat it because my lunch would be wrapped in the bread wrapper. And when the wealthy children brought their lunches, it was wrapped in wax paper and very neat, and the sandwiches were clipped and everything. And more than likely, I had two heels of bread and maybe a very greasy meatball sandwich, and I didn't want anybody to know that I ate stuff like that. So after lunch, I would climb down the brink of this bank and go into this drainage ditch and walk underneath it until I'd be in the middle of the schoolyard. And there were drainage holes where you could look up into the schoolyard, and like Bobby Stoddard would run past. And I'd, "Hey, Bobby!" And of course he'd stop and look around. He couldn't see anybody, but I could see him, so I'd laugh at him. And then later on when I'd climb out of the ditch, what I was actually doing was retreating to the womb, psychologically, I guess. After, when I was back in class, I'd tease him. I'd say, "Hey, the ghost got you, huh?" "Hey, what do you mean? I heard your name when it got called. Where were you?" "That's all right, I heard it."
But you were saying that sometimes teachers sometimes were friends.
Oh, yes. Eventually, Virginia Howe, whose mother was an opera singer, which automatically made her a persona non grata, because someone whose parent was in the arts was someone to be looked down upon. Virginia became my friend. As I look back, I think Virginia may have been a touch butch, but I didn't know anything about all that then. I invited her to explore this tunnel with me. So she and I are sitting down there in this mud, and the teacher found out about it. And they were going to use that as grounds for expelling me because I was placing another student, not me, but another student in danger. And there was a teacher named Mrs. Hume, who was a lovely blonde woman who had gone to school at Stanford, which of course was the school that everyone aspired to go to, who told me that I was such a pretty little girl, and why did I run away and hide? And I'd never been told I was pretty before. And I didn't realize I was hiding. But it was the first overture. She taught French, and I then became a French master.
What do you remember? Did you like to read?
Yes, I've always liked to read. I started with a book, with a series of books called My Book House. I've still got some of the books that I had as a child.
Mm-hmm. Which ones do you remember most vividly, or which ones that perhaps influenced how you saw the world? Or?
The Campfire Girls. I read that entire series. That's the Betsy Drew series. Well, that was what everybody else was reading, and I wanted to be up on whatever the conversation was at the time.
Did your parents ever take you to the theater? Not the movie theater?
No.
Because they considered it sinful or something?
Not sinful. They didn't know anything about the theater. As I said, although I made my living in the theater for 25 years and had some modicum of success in it, my father has come to New York. He and I have been sitting in his car on 125th Street in front of the Apollo Theater, where my name was blazing in lights. Now, it took some doing for me to get it there. And my father has said to me, "What are you going to do to make a living, Sybil, here in New York City?" Now, if that isn't a put down, explain it to me.
But you had, okay, we had social ostracism at school, but you had black friends.
Mm-hmm.
And were there ways in which you selected certain people to be your friends and excluded
other people? No, what usually happened with our black friends was that, as I say, the man who had a job working with a wealthy family probably had the best job in town. And those men knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had children, their children became my friends.
Mm-hmm. Were there people in the Negroes that your parents told you to stay away from?
Oh, yes, the common ones.
How were they identified?
Those were the ones that looked raggedy and looked poor. They had less than we. That identified them as common.
Mm-hmm. Do you continue?
My mother applied this term. I think it's an old Southern term.
Right. So you were in the Scouts and all that kind of thing at Booker T. Washington Center. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you remember particularly about that center?
Oh, I was about that center. I spent an awful lot of time there. Whatever was happening there, I was usually involved with, until the time came when that center began to harbor Negroes who had communist leanings. Well, we didn't recognize it at first, and I'm sure they didn't either. I think they were taken in the beginning. Meanwhile, from that center, I met William Pittman, who was the editor of the San Francisco Spokesman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was a chatty little monster, and so he knew my dad, my mother. So he agreed to take me on during the summer for a summer job. He was going to pay me all $6 a week. And I was going to be the social editor of the San Francisco Spokesman. So I had to write a feature article, which I was very capable of doing, because I had a better vocabulary than most of the readers. Also, you didn't have to worry too much, because Negroes like to see their names in print. So what they would do would be, you'd have a big stack of mail, you go through it, Mrs. Horace James entertained 12 at dinner on Saturday night. And then she'd give you the menu, and then she'd give you the guests. And the motif of the party was gladiolas and ham. So all you have to do is transpose it and write it, and you got an article.
Gladiolas and ham. That's something else we returned to in a late interview, the spokesman experience. As a female, in view of the present struggle for women's liberation,
I have always been liberated. I have never been a wife who would bring her earnings to her husband or tell him how much I made. And 9 times out of 10, I made more money than he did. I was always more successful than they were.
But as a teenager, did you feel that men ruled the world and that it was a disadvantage?
Only my father. Only my father. To hell with the President of the United States. The baddest son of a gun in the United States was my dad, Walter Sanford. And you better know it.
Were there other people in the community that felt that way?
Most of my girlfriends felt the same way. We all felt that we'd be doing a fellow a favor if we married him. It wasn't such a thing as, when I get my husband, I'm going to do this, that, and the other for him. It's if I decide to marry that clown, which I guess is the liberated female.
How did women get sex education in those days?
I got mine from freshman hygiene in college. I knew from nothing. I didn't even get the birds and the bees. But nothing. Because I think my mother was ashamed.
When you left home at 19, after the big wedding, was there a conscious rift between you and your parents? That they
oh, good heavens, yes.
They saw it as being an abandonment in some way?
Absolutely. Well, for one thing, my mother lost her maid and cook. And I think my father genuinely missed me. And as he looked back, he decided that, well, maybe he had been kind of hard on me, and I agreed with that 100%.
But did the rift... And
it was the beginning of the breakup of the family.
Was the rift, did it heal over time?
It healed over a period of 20 years.
But there was always a feeling that in some way you had...
Yeah, I broke up the family, honey. You did it. We'd have had a good family, hadn't been for you.
They would have been happy then if you'd never married.
No, my father wasn't about to let me stay on in the house. Uh-uh.
But your mother would have been.
Oh, yeah, that would have been very convenient.
Why didn't she ever take on a maid, or did she, after you left?
My father wouldn't have paid for nobody. That's what he had her there for, to be his maid.
Well, in terms of imitating the upper-class lifestyle.
Maids were out. They cost money. That's out.
Well, actually, I think I would rather begin talking about life after 19 in another session, fresh. Is that all right?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, I'll gather together some of the printed stuff for my own life, because I've got that.
Okay, great.